Children, we're starting.
That's right.
Showtime!
Another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
You might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 87 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from audio2u.com. With me on the line once again, now that we've got Skype back up and running, Shelton Muller, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine now that we've got Skype back up and running. What happened with that?
I don't know, mate. I don't think they paid the little guy that was on the bike pedaling.
The little hamster on the wheel.
That's it, yeah.
He's going now. They gave him some cheese or something.
Yeah.
And
he's running at full speed.
He's running at full speed. I haven't eaten hamster yet. I've eaten guinea pig, but not hamster.
You are kidding me, right?
No, I have eaten guinea pig.
Yes. Seriously?
But yeah, seriously, yeah. In Peru, it's
no
what you
way.
Eat.
What?
Yeah. It's on the menus outside the restaurants. You know, you'll see.
Oh my god!
Yeah. So if anybody's been to Peru and you've eaten guinea pig, let us know. It tastes like chicken, but what else did you expect it to taste like? Yeah, they actually just sort of, you know, cook the guinea pig and they put it all on your plate, head and all, opened up.
Is that right?
So
is a guinea pig a rodent?
I think it might be.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, there you go. I've eaten the rodent.
That's scary.
They keep them there for eating.
So they're probably bred in fairly clean environments. It's not like rats running around the sewers.
Oh, who knows? I just went in Rome. You know, I'll never forget. I was in a restaurant in Halong Bay in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful place. I was running a photo tour through Vietnam, and we were in this restaurant, all sitting around. And Halong Bay is not the most, you know, clean or beautiful place of town anyway. The Halong Bay itself is gorgeous, like 2,000 islands that just jut out of the ocean. You know, it's awesome.
Okay.
And as we're sitting there, these rats are running up poles, you know, in the restaurants and across the stairs. And you just, oh, well, you know, not hundreds of them, but the odd one every now and again.
Oh, well, the rats eat here. It must be okay.
Well, it must be okay. They like the food, you know. We fatten them up, and then they become the chicken.
Yeah.
But I was sitting in a bar having a beer in Hanoi, and out from behind the bar comes this rat, and he just sort of stands upright and has a look at everybody. And I just laughed my head off.
No.
You know, that's the thing. Apart from the photography, I do love travel for that reason. But, you know. Oh, boy. Well, we've got some emails to go through today,
we
insert email music here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you got email music yet?
No.
I don't listen to the podcast because I do them. Have you got email music yet?
No, because we have a music theme that runs through the whole podcast. So it's
true, I suppose. You haven't got a little chime that goes... No? Okay. Email time.
I'll find a Tibetan monk, you know...
Ding. Yeah, that's it. Email.
We have a nice that
goes ding. You got the machine that goes bing. Python fan will know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
All right. A couple of emails. Firstly, we were just talking before we went on air about Andrew Zanagorski's images. Andrew, thank you for sending those through. Andrew lives near Melbourne in Geelong, so we'll talk slowly for you, Andrew. And only kidding. He sent us some fabulous photographs we're going to post up on audio2u.com, and that he sort of was inspired to take when we talked about blurs and panning. Now, he has a very interesting take on all of this, everybody, but the way that he sees and blurs images is really terrific.
I really like them, and I mean no disrespect, Andrew, when I say when I saw them, I immediately thought of like background wallpapers for Windows or your mobile phone or something. They just look great.
Yeah, they are. And we should ask Andrew if we can sort of, you know, license them for people to use as wallpapers for the desktop or something. No, they were really terrific. And thank you very much for your encouraging email and how much you're enjoying it. He says that it's very entertaining with occasionally some good photography advice. So, thanks for that, mate.
All so we've got the and balance pretty much right.
Yeah, well, he's not benefiting from the podcast very much, is he? All his photos are out of focus, you know? So, now, Andrew, good work, mate. Thank you very much for sending that through. Now, Bruce, did you put your homemade softbox pictures up on the web at all?
No, I haven't yet.
Well,
do you
Bruce,
think
everybody...
I should?
Well, just maybe one, so okay. That, you know, because a couple of weeks ago we were talking about DIY,
yeah.
And Bruce made himself a homemade softbox out of a cardboard box and some silver foil paper, some alfoil paper. So, and what was the diffusing material you used?
An old T-shirt.
There you go.
Yeah, so basically, I'll post it up. So what I got was a cardboard.
Take a picture of the softbox if you still have it.
I have taken one, but I probably should take one of the front side of it as well. Basically, it was an old Tupperware box that Kath had some Tupperware delivered in.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably 18 inches wide and 12 inches deep, and and probably 18 inches on the third dimension. And, just cut the hole in the back for the flash to go in, lined the inside mm-hmm. with alfoil, and then just got an old T-shirt, cut it so that I only had one layer of the fabric. I didn't need two layers of fabric. Mm. And then just used some thumbtacks to hold the material over the front of the box.
Yes.
And I started out with just the flash inside the softbox by itself. And I took some test shots of my newly acquired 135mm f2.8 lens sitting on the kitchen granite benchtop. And then I thought to myself, what about colour? And so I went and hunted around in one of Kath's drawers in the spare room where she keeps all of our greeting cards and wrapping paper and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I found some gold-coloured gauze.
Mm.
And what I did was I folded that over a couple of times and then put an elastic band around it and just laid it over the front of the flash head inside the box.
Yes.
So that then gave me sort of a gold soft box kind of mm-hmm. look. So I'll make sure that I post up pictures of the 135mm lens with both the original white light and then with the gold gauze over the the flash as well.
I mean, if you had sort of a large, packing crate or old tea chest or something like that, you could make a permanent. If you had a permanent sort of studio setup, you make your own softbox or something nice and large. You go down and get yourself some mylar or some diffusing white material, and you've got your own softbox and just put a flash in it and bang, away you go.
As you learn
though, you need a lot of power out of your flash, so you might actually need to buy maybe a secondhand Metz 45 or Metz 60 would be fine, or a flash head that you can buy secondhand. But that you just put that inside the thing, cut a hole, bang, and Bob's your uncle. And we'll talk about
or
you
actually
in a minute,
Bob. a second light source. Because what I was trying to do was, as you may recall, months ago I did a photo shoot with Dave in his house, and we used those portable work lights.
Yes.
And Dave lives quite a long way from where I am, so I went next door to my neighbour across the street and borrowed mm-hmm. his. But his was a fairly small one, and it didn't have as much power as my flash. So what I think I need was a bigger second light source, because I think my flash was powerful enough. It was mm-hmm. the other light that didn't have enough grunt.
Right.
But yes, what I did learn from the whole experience was that, yes, you need bucket loads of light.
Power, yeah. And there's no reason you couldn't use a constant light source, a very powerful a halogen or whatever, as long as you get your white balance right.
There's
no reason you couldn't use it. And the thing about a constant light source is that it would also be a modeling light at the same time, letting you know exactly how your portrait is looking in terms of, its shadow and contrast.
That's
How the light is modeling the face or the subject.
Yeah.
These things are great. So have a look. I mean, Bruce just did a few quick photos in his house, and I think that they prove the point that you can make your own lighting equipment, customize your own lighting equipment from stuff you find around the house.
As I said to you in the email that I sent you, my only regret now is that I didn't hold out to buy a flash with wireless technology, because I have to be permanently tethered, which means that the spiral cord between mm-hmm. my hot shoe on my camera and the flash was pretty much stretched to its maximum, and I had the softbox sort of sitting right beside me because I couldn't get any further away from it because of the cord. If I had wireless, I could then put the softbox around at a 90-degree angle or whatever I wanted, but I sort of can't really do that at the moment.
you're limited with, you know, yeah, the tethering. But maybe all you've got to do, Bruce, get yourself a nice constant light source, a desk lamp with a 100-watt globe in it or something. Yeah. You never know. Like, you know, that's, I mean, it's all just about light, and you can white balance that all out, and away you go.
Absolutely.
So, you know, but good on you for doing that.
Yeah, it was a good experience. It certainly, you know.
What did it teach you?
Well, it, I don't know if it taught me anything, but it certainly got me thinking about, you know, color of light, direction of light, you know, the way, you know, the cloth could diffuse the light.
Right.
It certainly, you know, got me thinking about things.
Good. And, you know, you can take that principle and then move it outside as well. You know, if you and look at what the clouds do to the sunlight, or look at how light reflects off different textures and substances for your own portrait sessions outdoor. Everything we learn in principle, whether it be in lighting outdoors or lighting indoors, we can take that principle anywhere we go. And you know, you'll know now, for instance, that if you've got a bright sunlit day, but you take a large scrim with you, like a translucent, you know, white cloth on a frame.
Yep.
That you can, that you've got a big outdoor softbox that you just get an assistant to hold. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that kind of principle you learn and take with you no matter where you go for the benefit of your portraits.
Yeah.
So, learning to DIY is a good thing. Sometimes we can just buy a store-bought thing and we think, well, that's what it does. But if we've made it ourselves, customized it ourselves, adapted it ourselves, we're talking... or thinking in terms of principles. And that's always where I like to teach, if possible, so that
definitely.
No matter what situation we're in, we can segue one from the other, you know? Mm-hmm. So, look, that was terrific. And everybody, have a look at Bruce's pictures, and you can see what you can do with a cardboard box and a few household items like an old T-shirt. You know, the T-shirt was clean, I hope, was it?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right. Well, the shots look nice and clean, so.
Good.
We got an email, didn't we, from our lone female listener.
We did.
Holly finally responded. Thank you, Holly. Very nice. We're going to have to get you to recruit some more female listeners, but thank you very much for that. Holly has emailed us and said that she does love our Aussie accents. Well, I would hesitate to say that mine isn't quite an Aussie accent. What about you, Bruce?
I have an
Aussie accent?
No, I wouldn't.
No.
Okay, I'd say I do.
Yeah, well, you do. Yeah. I mean, I have Aussie vowel sounds because I've certainly lost my Canadian vowel sounds.
Yeah.
And I don't end every sentence with A like the Canadians do or Queenslanders do. But I say my R's, Holly. I drive a car, not a car, like Australians drive. They drive cars. And Australians shop in supermarkets. I shop in a supermarket. So I still say my R, okay? That would be the difference between me and an Aussie accent. But thank you very much for... your email and your question, which I will talk about in today's subject. Holly asks this question: I would love to hear a podcast on focusing techniques. I guess it's probably what people are used to. I know a lot of people use the center focusing sensor and recompose, but there isn't always time to do that. I tend to move the focus around to the different sensor points as needed for the composition. Oh, to keep the focus on the eyes, for example, she says. Something else I'd like to hear as a topic, which is where I'm going to go today in the topic we're going to discuss, which is macro photography. There is a difference in your depth of field, or is there rather a difference in your depth of field, depending on how close you are to your subject. So if you have a fast lens, she says, like an 85 1.8, if you are as close as you can be to your subject, you will have greater fall off in the depth of field than if you are a little further away. Yes, that's absolutely right. Proximity has everything to do with depth of field. And that we're going to talk about very much so in our macro subject today, because proximity is, of course, a key factor in macro photography. So yes, the closer you are to your subject, the less depth of field you'll have. The further away, the more depth of field you'll have at the same aperture, which is why, you know, landscapes, you can get a heck of a lot of depth of field with, you know, small apertures and medium apertures. But at close range, like a portrait, for instance, or with an 85 1.8, especially if you are at 1.8, you've got to focus smack on. If you're just that little bit off, your eyes are out of focus, happens to me all the time, don't worry about it. you've got to be very careful. So that is why. But that and we'll talk about that in our our podcast today on macro photography, which was the subject that was asked by Brad Wilkins of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And he asks, look, can we talk a little bit about macro? Because it's not something we've really talked a lot about. So, yep, we will do that, Brad.
Brad also sent us some panning shots as well.
Yes, he sure did.
Of his boys in the backyard, so...
And look, he says basically that they're a bit, you know, he seems to think they're a bit too blurred, but I don't know that that's an issue. I mean, I don't think so at all. It's how you want to convey the movement. So, you know, I think that that they're just fine, absolutely fine. Final email that I can think of at the moment that I've got right here is from Paul on the Gold Coast. Yep. And he says, I have a Panasonic FZ3, which is a 12x zoom that I bought a few years back, and I think it's great. And yes, it's a great camera. I didn't want the size and accessories of an SLR, but wanted a long lens to photo my son on the beach and playing sports. I've decided that I want to be a bit better than just happy snap photos. What is it you suggest? Join a club, do something online? All of the above, Paul. Yes, join a club and do something online. You can even join our Shutters Inc. Flickr site on Shutters Inc. Everybody should do that. We'll talk about that at the end of our podcast. Ideas, please. And remember, not everyone wants to lug an SLR around. Did that back in film times. That would be where I would disagree with you, Paul. And look, working with a DSLR is completely different to working with a prosumer camera like the FZ3. And so I would say, yes, if you really want to take your photography seriously, I would personally prefer to see you with a DSLR than... a prosumer camera with an all-in-one that you've got. Not that there's anything wrong with what you've got. It's just that, one, you're saying, you know, it's a few years old, so therefore it will have some shutter lag issues, which DSLRs don't have. And also, there's an understanding of how a DSLR works that's rather intuitive, and often that is not the case with a prosumer camera like the one you've got. That doesn't mean, though, that you can't take fantastic pictures with what you have, and no doubt you already have. As I've said, it doesn't, you know, I've worked with everything from, you know, compacts that I've carried around. I took a Leica Celux 2 on a wedding with me on the weekend, and while I had my camera, say, on the tripod while I was setting up a group shot or something like that, I had my Leica on me. So if the kids were playing up, the bride did something silly, I could just whip this little Leica out of my little thing on my hip, and it's a compact, awesome little camera, and just snap away. So to me, it doesn't matter what camera you have, as long as you know how to use it and you know how to see. But if you're wanting to be a little bit better than happy snap photos, your Panasonic will do it, but I don't know that it will do it as well as having a DSLR with the equipment. But that's, I'm not exactly sure how far you want to go. Now, you wanted us also to return to, if I remember Bruce correctly, to Bob Iverson's email.
Yeah, absolutely. The email that he sent us a couple of weeks ago, which I think we addressed some of it last week, but there was more where he was saying or suggesting that perhaps we could have or come up with a regular sort of assignment for our listeners.
Yes.
And I'm just scrolling back to... Also, why don't we have some running contests where you pick the theme or a particular technique to really highlight our learning curve? Also, it might be great to get people to jump in with their shots. Maybe you have a link to a site that posts these results. You know that most of us are amateurs and vain and want to see our work published. If it turns up interest, then it could lead advertisement support. You probably don't even have a prize, as just being mentioned would be very exciting for most of us if we were to get such an honour. And then he listed some topics to perhaps get started with. So anyway, I thought, you know, it was maybe worth discussing. And
well, next week I'll announce the prize. I'll work that out.
Beauty.
And I'll talk to some people who'll talk to some people that I know, and we'll get you a prize. But, you know, what do you reckon? We take Bob off on his suggestion, and we make our first competition the window light portrait competition.
Oh, sweet.
What do you think?
Yep.
Everybody can do that.
Absolutely.
Everybody, no matter what camera you've got, can do a good window light portrait. Now, we'll be looking for how you've used the light to model the face.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be looking at the pose, your exposure, any other unique aspects of that portrait. Now, it doesn't have to be head and shoulders. It can be full length. It can be three quarter. It can be whatever you like. It can be man, woman, child, goat, cat. It can be whatever you want. But it will be looking for, obviously, you know, photographic prowess and the attractiveness of the image. So it will be an overall competition on, you know, how you've mastered window light portraiture. And we'll announce the winner soon. I'll organize a prize and announce that for our next podcast for next week. But there it is, and we'd really love everybody to get involved. Your best window light portrait.
Sounds good.
It's very Rembrandt of us. So I think Rob, thanks, Bob, thanks very much for great suggestion, and I'm still waiting to hear from you on whether you want to fly me over to your fabulous country and run a workshop over there, okay?
I noticed some comments on the Flickr group about that, about how they felt that they definitely needed to get both of us over to the US.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Absolutely.
You know, I tell you what, we would do a hands-on workshop, and we would record our podcast right there and then with everybody there. That'd be so
absolutely
much fun. Everybody in the room recording our podcast. So that'd be terrific. So thanks. Look, mate, if that can happen, that would be terrific. We're going to talk more about a couple of workshops at the end of our podcast, but shall we move on to talking about what we've been asked to talk
definitely
about, Bruce?
Definitely.
All right, because we've got through the giggle crap part. All right,
that's right.
So now good photography tips. Macro photography is a fascinating field.
I should insert one of those high speed, you know, credits at the end. You know, crap giggle copyright. Which animal?
Yes, proudly brought to you by. Is it a problem? Conditions
not spoken by.
Macro photography is. No, I'll, all right. You're going to shut up now? Or am I able to? Yeah, okay. All right. This is my podcast, Bruce. You're just the audio technician.
Sorry, mate.
All right. Okay. Macro photography is an interesting, very interesting field of endeavor. And the great thing about it is that when we talk about getting close, and we've talked about that a lot in our podcast, you know, macro is the absolute getting close. And it really doesn't matter what you photograph. Macro can be a close-up of the end of a ballpoint pen, or it could be the close-up of a flower or an insect or whatever. It really doesn't. All things can be, you know, textures, shapes, and colors can be interesting photographs really close. The first point of call is the equipment. A lot of people get very scared when they start thinking about macro equipment because they suddenly realize that they may have to get a second mortgage. That's not absolutely true. You can do macro on some very, very simple things. Naturally, of course, you would consider that if you were going to take macro photography seriously, you'd want to buy yourself a macro lens. The advantage of having a macro lens that, say, is a 90 or a 105 or, you know, that sort of focal length is that that macro lens then also doubles as a portrait lens. So it will have, you know, some double benefits. But you would want at least a focal length of around 90 or 100 because the thing with macro is that you have to get very, very close to your subject. And the wider the angle of view, the closer you actually have to get to your subject. So if it's an insect or, you know, a flower or whatever, especially insects, you're going to have a problem because you'll scare them away. If it is an insect, by the way, I have seen interesting photographs taken where photographers have set up an indoor setting. They've got a cardboard box, and this is where we get back to our DIY. They've cut one of the panels out, painted the inside of the cardboard box a dark blue or even a black, and then placed all plants inside the box. And they've caught the insect, and it could be, you know, a grasshopper, a praying mantis, a butterfly. They've caught the insect, put it in a jar, and actually, now I hope I don't get comments back from, you know, insect rights groups, but they take the insect. And I have done this, okay? So I admit to doing this. Me and my friends have done this. We take the insect in a jar and we put it in the fridge. And what happens is... here we go. This is where we're going to start getting all the activists, you know. I can see protesters outside my place right now. What happens is insects at night when things are cold, their metabolism just closes right down. And they become into a state of stasis almost. At that point, you wouldn't want to put them in the freezer, but, you know, in the fridge for a few minutes, they will just shut right down, and they're used to doing that. Then you take it out of the jar and you can, you know, you can place it wherever you like. I know of macro photographers who do this. They place the insect on the, you know, the appropriate leaf or a bit of branch or whatever, and they've got their own homemade studio to do macro work. So if that's something that interests you, away you go. But in the field, of course, is the most difficult place to do insect and, you know, work, but it's not impossible, especially if you've got, you know, a flower or a plant to which any particular insect is attracted or lives on. But the longer the lens, the better, really, because it will actually keep you further away from your subject. Macro photography requires that you actually get physically very close. I have a Tamron 183.5 macro lens, and I love it. But even at 180mm, I'm still, you know, a foot away maybe from a subject at you know, close distance at its full macro setting. So maybe even closer. I'd have to sort of check that. But, you know, even at that distance, you know, you can scare off, you know, an insect that that's coming to visit the flower. So the longer the lens, the better. And remember that it will act double as a portrait lens, you know, or a telephoto lens if you get a 180 or a 200 micro or something. But the thing about those lenses is that they are quite expensive. They're several hundred dollars, you know, a few hundred dollars for a 90mm Tamron will, you know, but, you know, the 180 Tamron is about $1,600 Australian dollars. So, you know, they can be, you know, quite expensive. There are cheaper ways of setting up macro equipment. You can buy close-up filters, not the world's best thing for macro, but if it's not something you're going to specialize in, these are just, you know, little glass lenses that you can screw on the front of your camera, and they will actually bring you nice and close to, you know, if you're photographing flowers or insects. Not the world's best way of getting close, but it works. Extension tubes. These things have been around for ages, and they are basically, it is basically a metal tube with a bayonet fitting that fits to your camera on one end and a bayonet fitting that allows your lens to fit onto it at the other. And all it does is remove your lens from your camera and extend it away from the focal point, and thus increasing the you know, close-up magnification ability of that lens. Now, a set of extension tubes you could probably pick up on eBay if they're there, pretty cheap, but, you know, they're only, I don't know, $100 to $200 or something for a full, you know, working set. Now, you won't get all of the electronic connections on a set of extension tubes, but with macro, you're best to sort of deal in full mechanical manual often anyway. So that's a fairly cheap way of doing it. Now, you can buy a reversing adapter. And what it is a very simple metal ring. One, it has a bayonet on one side that fits into your camera's mount, and a filter thread on the other. So you can actually screw your lens on backwards onto your camera, and you've got a working macro lens. And naturally, you can open and close your apertures. Now, you're best to do this, of course, naturally with a prime lens, a fixed focal length lens, like a 50mm. You're limited because it only has, you know, one very, very close way of looking at everything. But, you know, that's the way it is. Now, the other thing about it is, of course, that zoom lenses often focus very close, and some better than others. You know, some will have a 1-2, 1-3 macro, you know, capability, and that's not always too bad. So if you've got a zoom lens that focuses nice and close, then, you know, it's not true macro, because really macro is 1-1, in other words, life size. It's, you know, life, by life size, we, in the 35 millimeter days, we meant that if something was 24 by 36 millimeters in size, then it would fill the frame, and that's life size. So, you know, with an APS-C size sensor, it would be life size, but yeah, even smaller. It would be a smaller object, a smaller subject, because the APS-C size sensor is smaller. But you can get digital, you can get zoom lenses, rather, that will focus very, very close and do, you know, a very, very lovely job of macro, but not as close as, say, a true macro lens will. Much really depends on how serious, you know, you want to get about doing macro. But yes, and that's the issue here again with your question, Holly. Proximity does change depth of field. And that's why when you are so close to a subject like, you know, an insect or a flower petal or something like that, you need maximum depth of field, which brings us to the other problem with macro photography, and that is light. In macro photography, often you need to work with very small apertures. If you're in the field and you're photographing a flower, you're photographing an insect or whatever, anything that's moving, and you're set at f22, f32, f16, you're going to be working with a fairly slow shutter speed unless there's light, daylight belting all over the place. But that's not always true. And sometimes you want to photograph when the light is at its sweetest or when the insects are at their most active, which is often morning or evening, and light is just not around. So if you can't use available light, and that is so often the case with macro photography, because you need to work with small apertures just to get enough depth of field to keep your subject sharp, then you're going to have a camera, a flash rather, that you can have off camera preferably. And I say off camera because if you are working very, very close to a subject like a flower or an insect, your flash may not actually be had the directional capability to illuminate the thing that's right in front of you.
The light would fire
over the top. Not only that, but if you've got a if you've got bellows on or extension tubes or whatever, they can actually cast a shadow. So it can be a real problem.
This is where you need your homemade softbox.
Yes, you need to be able to take your flash off camera with a nice coiled lead that they often have, or you know, if you've got a wireless setup, or just a simple synchronization lead will do. But you're better to have you can take your flash that you use and take it off camera. And the great thing about that too is that you can make that look very natural, because good macro photography often is about just having one light source like the sun, so that it looks natural. And an off-camera flash just held off to your left or to your right or overhead or underneath or directly almost behind, but not in shot, of course, is a great way to direct the lighting on your subject. If you're photographing flower petals, for instance, you'd want to bring your flash around maybe to the side so that you can highlight the texture of the petal that you're, the flower petals. Or you could even backlight, the flower or the insect or whatever using an off-camera flash. A lot of macro photographers use ring flash, which, connects to the front. I like ring flash in fashion photography, but I've never really liked it as a macro light, because it doesn't cast a lot of shadow. That's its whole idea. But they're also very expensive and they don't have a lot of power. I don't think a ring flash is absolutely necessary for macro. I think your standard hot shoe mounted flash will do just fine. And if you take it off camera and synchronize it somehow, you'll be able to work with that just fine. You'll be, if your camera has TTL flash and is, you've got the synchronization for that all set up through some sort of TTL connection lead, then you don't have to worry about exposure. But otherwise, with your lens extended at macro, you will seriously need to worry about your exposure. So a little bit of trial and error will happen there, but there's a lot of mathematical calculations that we won't go into. If you want us to go into them in a future podcast, we will. But just suffice it to say, you need a fair bit of flash power, and because you're working at very small apertures. But that's basically the equipment that you need. The technique is, the world's your oyster with macro photography. But I would naturally suggest, if you are going to get serious about this, that you get a good tripod, one that's easy to set up, one that actually extends down very low to the ground. So it needs to have a good leg spread, so that you can come right down to the ground where your flowers and your insects often dwell, and mushrooms and whatever else you're going to be photographing. Because the great thing about the tripod is, yes, it keeps the camera sturdy, it keeps your setup established so that it doesn't move, and because you're working with often, slow shutter speeds, in the case of, if you're not working with flash, for instance, you need to keep the camera sturdy. But once you've got everything set up, you really can't afford to move if you're really close. So have a good tripod that comes right down. The other thing that is a good idea to have, if you're really going to take your macro photography serious, is a focusing rail. It's actually something that sits on top of the tripod and moves your camera in and out. With macro photography, the focusing ring on your on your lens is not always the thing that actually, makes great changes in your focusing. At that range, that will make very minute changes in your focus. But moving the camera physically backward and forward is the thing that changes your settings, your focus. You've got Usually you'll have your lens set at its closest focus anyway. So you literally have to physically move the camera to make sure that your subject is sharp. That's why if you've got a focusing rail and that the camera sits on, you can just by turning a dial move your camera back and forward rather than lift your whole tripod up, you know, and move it a centimeter or two. But either way, a good tripod that comes down low to the ground that you can, with an easy to use head at the very least, is going to be essential for good macro photography. And from there, well, basically it's a matter of, well, doing everything else you know how to do, composing, lighting, etc. With flash, I would always suggest that you do a few options. You know, move your flash around to the left, to the right, underneath, over the top, and even behind to give your subject, if it's an insect or a flower or whatever, different lighting so that you rim light it, side light it, light it, as I've said, directly overhead. And the advantage of having flash to do that, an off-camera flash, is simply you can make it look like any time of day, any kind of light, and you can simulate sunlight most beautifully in, you know, by using off-camera flash. If you are planning on using available light, another great macro technique is actually to minimize your depth of field completely and focus on, well, the bee's knees, quite literally, or the wings of the eyes of the insect and blur everything else. Macro photography that's done that way is very effective, but very difficult to do because you're working so close to your subject that any movement, the wind blows just slightly, the insect moves just a millimeter, and bang, you're out of focus.
Yeah.
And macro photography needs to be absolutely pin sharp. That which you're focusing on. Now, if you're using a depth of field technique to blur everything else and highlight the subject, good on you, fabulous. But that which you actually intend to have sharp needs to be absolutely pin sharp. And that's why available light macro photography can be very difficult. So I would suggest try it with flash, become an expert. And then, if you want to, and you want to try, you know, those other depth of field techniques, move on to available light macro work, which you can find a lot of and is absolutely beautiful, but not necessarily the best starting point for a learning macro photographer. If you want to give that a try, by all means, but it wouldn't be my first port of call. So that's basically a rundown of how we start off with macro photography. We'll talk about, you know, other aspects of macro in future podcasts, but that's our starting point. And I would suggest that maybe for now, let's start getting in some images that and get out there and try some macro photography and send us your examples and what you've successfully done and we'll have a look at them. But I'll keep it simple for the moment because that's our starting point. And the rest we'll learn in future podcasts if the questions keep coming and the interest keeps coming. But let me know how you go with either those equipment ideas or those, you know, lighting techniques and focusing techniques, because we'd be interested to know how you've gone with just that so far.
Absolutely.
How's that, Bruce?
That's absolutely good. Yeah.
Now, a couple of things. We do now have, according to Richard Annable's Flickr site... And I hope you've all joined, by the way. I've recently joined, and I know you've joined, Bruce, onto the Flickr site for Flickr Shutters, Inc. It's a great thing, actually. It really is. And it's great to see everybody's photographs and discussions and forums and interactions on the Flickr site. It's really fabulous. But we now, off that website, have a Shutters, Inc. t-shirt available. So I never thought we'd get to this point, but
no.
Redbubble is making all the money and we're doing the podcast. But there is a Shutters, Inc. t-shirt available. It'd be lovely to like walk down the street one day and see someone wearing the crap, crap, giggle, giggle Shutters, Inc. podcast t-shirt. But everybody, have a look at this t-shirt. It is a giggle. And then go and buy yourself one because it's funny. I like it. Well done. But if you haven't seen the Flickr site for Shutters, Inc., make sure that you do. You can access it off the link on shuttersincpodcast.com or audio2u.com and join in the fun that is not only Shutters, Inc. podcast, but now a Shutters, Inc. worldwide Flickr club.
Yeah.
So, you know, which is terrific. I have still the Kangaroo Island photo workshop being planned, so I'd still be interested in any if anybody wants to join us for that. But if you're a Queensland listener, I've been also organizing a two-day hands-on portrait and wedding workshop in Rockhampton in Queensland, and I will be giving you more information on that. But that workshop will take place on September the 22nd and 23rd in Rockhampton in Queensland. It came about based on a phone call from one of my Total Image readers up there, who rang me and said, would you come up here and run a workshop? And absolutely I will. And so she's organizing the people and the venues, and I'm turning up and running the workshop. It's not a difficult thing if you live in a remote place to actually organize. If you live in a remote town in Australia and you want me to come, I'm happy to do it. If you live in a remote town in any part of the world, I'm happy to do it. Basically, she just got this idea that if I get the people and we can finance it, will you come up? And my answer is always, absolutely, I will come up. So I'm doing a hands-on portrait and wedding photography. Saturday is basically the Saturday workshop is theory in the morning, which will be, you know, PowerPoint presentations of, you know, your portrait theory, available light portrait theory particularly, including lens work, depth of field, perspective, viewpoint, lighting. And then the afternoon will be a prac session with models to do the actual follow-up on what we've learned in the morning. Sunday will be basically wedding photography workshop, how to shoot a wedding, posing, lighting, etc. The various things that will, some of that will segue over from Saturday, of course, but there'll be some very, you know, interesting aspects of wedding photography that we'll be doing hands-on all day on the Sunday. So if you're interested in that, let me know. But that's me done.
Beautiful.
That's I'm ready to roll on for any questions that we have, and you know, on this subject of macro photography or anything you like us to raise for future podcasts.
Absolutely. And we want to see some available light window portraits next week.
Bring them on.
Absolutely.
Bring them on. And I'll make sure that it's a nice, worthwhile prize for us.
Cool.
I'm not sure what that will be yet, but I know some people who know some people.
Beautiful. Just remember, if you want to email us, it's studio@audiotu.com for me, or shelton@audiotu.com for him.
Yep.
And until next week, take care.
Yeah, good to talk to you, everybody, and thanks for getting back to us. It's always great to interact with you, and we appreciate, you know, having this worldwide fraternity. It's a lot of fun. Thank you.
All right, mate. Talk to you next week.
You bet. See you soon.
See ya.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.